morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, December 16th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Just a few headlines to kick things off today. A group of about 60 volunteers is close to its dream of getting a non-commercial radio station on coastal airwaves by April 14th. There'll be more out there as far as alternatives are concerned for people to listen to on the coast. And China has suspended imports of shellfish from the U.S. West Coast. You gotta wonder, China has not made a name for itself as insofar as contamination of food sources. And when China is wary of shellfish, it certainly would behoove one to reconsider shellfish here ourselves. Sister companies of Ailing Evergreen International Airlines are selling off big time. Of course, that's Fly CIA. McMinnville area land is worth more than $11 million, and it is on the block. And an analysis of documents from the state shows that private timber companies in the years 2009 to 2011 have been spraying increasing amounts of herbicides on private forests in rural Lane County. People who live adjacent to these forests are not happy about it. They've been getting sick. There have been complaints of all types. And we're going to be speaking a bit later in the program to Lisa Arkin at Beyond Toxics. First, this weather from our part of Cascadia this morning. Patchy fog. Otherwise, a sunny day with a high near 47. Calm winds. And tonight, more fog moving in. Lows around 34 for tomorrow. Pretty dense fog early on, otherwise mostly cloudy, highs near 43 and calm winds. Tomorrow night, there's a slight chance of rain or drizzle and a low around 38. We have a brief alternative forecast for you this morning. We've got a full root moon in Taurus, the synodic forecast. It's a good time for root vegetables. And the biodynamic people advise this with a moon in Taurus. It's an earth sign, it's a good time for root plants. And anything that you decide to pull up or pick off and eat right now, you should eat it right straight away and not attempt to store it. And that's the alternative as well as the conventional forecast. We're going to move straight away into the program. Just one quick note so that we don't let it get past us. We spoke extensively last week about the militarization of the police, and we have an extraordinary story today that apparently the police used flashbang grenades, which are not frequently only encountered in war zones, in a domestic dispute. In an apartment, one can only imagine the effect of flashbang grenades in a small enclosed space. They used other tactics and other tools from their war chest. If these types of implements of war can be deployed in what has got to be the most civilian possible setting, what more of this sort of behavior lies ahead? That question left floating around out there. It's time to speak with Lisa Arkin at Beyond Toxics, because if you live adjacent to certain tracts of private forest land, you have a serious problem right now. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're well, thanks. As far as I know, I'm not going to walk near a private forest and take any deep breaths in the near future. I'll be careful about that. But this has been allowed to slip. Regulatory agencies, where have they been?
The regulatory agencies are pretty much kept in the dark, so to speak, because Oregon has the weakest forest practices laws in the Northwest. Our laws are weaker than Washington and even Idaho in terms of protecting human health and drinking water, as well as rivers and salmon.
And so the people in Triangle Lake, this was an investigation, I understand, it was started last year. The health authority produced a draft public health assessment along with federal agencies. So what was this is what prompted the feds to become involved, as I understand it. So what right now can, given that we have very weak laws protecting forests on these lands, what can be done with what we have at our disposal at the moment as far as regulation and enforcement, in fact?
Well, what can be done is moving to more sustainable forestry in the short and long term. There are plenty of Oregon companies out there that are doing logging sustainably and are selling their timber products to FSC timber operations. So, you know, that can be done. But immediately what we need to do is change the law so that we are protecting homes, schools, and drinking water. There's a couple of incidents just this summer along the Oregon coast, residents in Rockaway Beach, residents in Florence, and residents in Gold Beach all filed complaints to our state government about the impacts of aerial forestry pesticide spray to their health and their drinking water. In fact, Beyond Toxics just sent a petition to the US EPA and the Center for Disease Control about an egregious pesticide poisoning in Curry County that occurred just in October. And the state has not done much of anything to help those people. And what's most shocking is that doctors and nurses cannot get the pesticide records to know how to treat their patients who are poisoned.
That was going to be my next question, is what have they been spraying? So we don't know.
No, we don't really know, because in Oregon, the public, including medical professionals, are not allowed to have access to these spray documentation records. So you can get a list of what might have been sprayed, but what you don't know is what actually was sprayed and what were the tank mixes. That's one thing our report shows, is that the public was unaware that these forestry companies, like the ones we're all aware of, Weyerhaeuser and others, are mixing vats of toxic chemicals out there on site and spraying them in a huge mixture all over the land. There's no one monitoring the effects of the synergistic impacts of all those toxic chemicals repeatedly applied to our forest ecosystems.
And you have to wonder what that does to the other creatures that live in those forests. When they talk about logging and the marbled murrelet in Elliott State, that's one species at risk, but this clearly would put a great many other species that are not in danger at clear risk. We have very little time left, but I want to ask you, what about time here? Yes, it would be good to change the laws, but that is a good long-term strategy. What do we have at our disposal right now, short-term, to address the problem?
There's nothing we really can do other than the two things I mentioned. One is change our laws, and the other one is move to an economy of sustainable forestry. And it's not true that you have to use aerial herbicide spray to make money from forestry. Our federal government, the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, and U.S. Forest Service has not used aerial pesticide spray for over 20 years.
Lisa, we're totally out of time. We're going to put a link to the website of Beyond Toxics on the KBOO website, and commend listeners' attention to that website. Follow along with us, because the solutions, as Lisa's saying, are long term, and it's up to responsible people to come up with some short term citizen direct action, because we have so much to lose here. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today at short notice. Thanks again for that. Lisa Arkin has been my guest with Beyond Toxics, and thanks again for that. We want to speak with Stephen Zunis now. Stephen Zunis has been a frequent guest on Air Cascadia, and with a particular interest in Middle East and in the U.S. is rather tarnished presence there overseas. The history of Nelson Mandela and U.S. involvement in Mandela's life in ways that are rather sordid, in that the CIA tipped off of the agencies that arrested Mandela and landed him on Robben Island for all those many, many years. Our involvement, we celebrate him now, of course, but it's been less than stellar. Mandela's life, though, has been stellar from the get-go. Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, it's really kind of ironic because, you know, I keep thinking back to my involvement as a student activist and divestment campaigns and the like, and we were in regular contact with the people in the ANC and you know, raised money for, you know, relief for refugees and that kind of thing. And with today's laws, we could have ended up in jail because the ANC was then considered by the U.S. government as a terrorist organization. In fact, Mandela himself was on the terrorist list as late as 2008.
Didn't he have to have some kind of special visa, or his visa was denied?
Yeah, he had to get some kind of special waiver. And even Condoleezza Rice admitted it was an embarrassing moment.
Yeah, and you'd think she'd be beyond embarrassment at that point.
Really. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Mandela, when Mandela did give up on the armed struggle in the early 60s after the Sharpeville massacre, he really tried to push the armed wing of the ANC to engage in sabotage and not target people. And then when it did advance towards a guerrilla war, they generally did not 100%, but a generally good job of avoiding civilian casualties. But nonetheless, they were considered a terrorist organization. And in my article in Open Democracy, which just came out a couple of days ago, I pointed out the fact that Mandela was first and foremost a pragmatist. He realized that, towards the end, that the real change in South Africa was not happening through the armed wing of the ANC, because they're barely able to penetrate the border. They do occasional bombings or sabotage or whatever, but maybe twice a month or something at that. It wasn't really getting very far. But what was happening was the United Democratic Front, the broad coalition of labor, church, human rights, other women's organizations, through strikes and boycotts and largely nonviolent action, that was bringing down the apartheid system, because they were so dependent on black labor that when things got so disrupted, when the townships essentially became autonomous units, when they started electing their own governments and ignoring the officially appointed ones, when they could strike and at will and boycott white businesses, they really started feeling the impact and the moral appeal of these largely nonviolent people being attacked by the brutal government. It was hard to pin the Harris label on them, and that helped inspire the sanctions movement, the divestment campaign, which played a major role as well. So, basically, in my article that prompted you to call me, I tried to emphasize that to get beyond the sort of ideological arguments about violence and nonviolence, and appreciate that Mandela, first and foremost, though he recognized the moral right of the people of South Africa to armed resistance, recognized that it was civil resistance, the largely nonviolent resistance, that was ultimately what brought down apartheid.
Stephen, thank you so much for that. We're so grateful for you to join us today. It's an extraordinary article, and again, something I commend to listeners' attention. I'll put a link there. This has been at Cascadia for Monday, December 16th, 2013. Kathleen Stevenson engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Kathleen. Kathleen is, of course, also the KBO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-5555.